Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts. Do it however you do it. Rate us, review us. We're like 5 stars, 4 stars. Come on now, don't be a hater. In this show, we're going to talk a bit about the LeBron free agency madness and the idea as to whether or not he actually makes his teammates better. But first... All right, the Warriors, they won the championship again. 3 times in 4 years that the Warriors won the championship. Kevin Durant is now not a one-time, but a 2-time NBA Finals MVP. That's a pretty prestigious list that he happens to be on there. I know a lot of people believe that them beating the Cavs was simply inevitable. I disagreed. I thought the Cavs had a chance to win this series, and I think the Cavs were in this for 3 out of the 4 games. Like, this was not... This was a sweep, but I did not find it to be like a truly dominating performance from the Warriors. But they got it. That part doesn't matter. They were, without question, the best team in the NBA. Like, maybe a team you could sneak up on, yeah, but were they the best team in the NBA? They were absolutely the best team in the NBA. They've been the best team in the NBA for basically the last 4 years. Pretty much uninterrupted, they've been the best team in the NBA, regardless of what records have happened to indicate. Now they're in this fun part where they got to try to keep this thing together. And I think that there's a lot of, we treat it as though it's a bit of a foregone conclusion that the Warriors are going to be able to keep this whole thing together. And I think that part of the reason why we treat it as such a foregone conclusion that the Warriors are going to keep this thing together is because they were able to add Kevin Durant without giving anything up. It's almost as though we have forgotten that this whole game, this whole salary cap game, is to prevent a team like the Warriors from coming up. Also, you have to stop and take a moment to appreciate that a significant thing about that lockout of 2011-2012, going to that, a big part of that lockout was owners trying to make sure that there was some level of competitive balance. Owners trying to make sure that the teams in smaller markets still had the ability to build something and hold on to their star players. Then, ironically, the first team to get broken up by the new salary cap rules was the Oklahoma City Thunder in that small market. Then, fast forward that, 4 years, and then Kevin Durant leaves that same small market for the 5th largest market in America. You kind of forget that that's what the Bay Area is because we call that team Golden State. But, they went over there. He goes to the big market team. Now the big market team's got the guys. We know the strokes of good luck that the Warriors had to make a cap situation that allowed for this. We know about the Warriors having to only pay Steph Curry that $11 million a year before he signed that big new contract. We knew about that. We knew about the cap spike. The players had a choice, really, to deal with the increase in revenue, whether they could have a cap spike or a more smooth increase in the cap. Players took a spike. In no small part because guys like LeBron James had a big hand in negotiations and they were up for new deals. They took for the cap spike. The spike created a scenario under which the Warriors were able to bring in Kevin Durant. So they've outsmarted the game and outlucked the game up until now. Now you got to try to keep all these players. And as much as people like to talk about this hometown discount idea, Kevin Durant gave them a bit of a discount this year. Yes, that was very nice of him to go ahead and do that. Andre Iguodala wasn't giving them a discount. You know, we got reports that Andre Iguodala was set to leave until Golden State bumped their offer up at the end. Bob Myers has said that he never thought Andre was leaving. There are others who seem to disagree. I just saw a report today. Draymond Green is not going to sign an extension this offseason. Draymond is going to play out this season in hopes that he will be able to get one of those supermax extensions that the Warriors would then be able to offer him, which is to say Draymond Green expects y'all to pay him something in the neighborhood of $40 million a year. We're not that far removed from when Klay Thompson's contract is going to come up. And when that comes up, that's going to be its own situation on what they have to pay. It looks as of right now as though the Warriors will be set to pay $198.6 million in luxury tax in 2019-2020. Let me run through all these years for you. This is going to our guy Bobby Marks, I believe. $90.4 million in luxury tax next season. Basically $200 million in luxury tax in 2019-2020 and $222 million in luxury tax. That's just the tax, right? So these numbers that you're getting in these last 2 years, they'd be paying more for the tax than they would be paying in salary. The NBA has worked this in such a way where their expectation is that that would wind up being the deterrent from holding on to these players, is that the luxury tax would wind up being too big. Uh-oh. Well, what happens when a team makes so much money in the playoffs that it doesn't matter? And that's where the Warriors are on this. The Warriors are stacking up all that money, you know, all that money in luxury tax charges. 14 home games in 2016, the Warriors made $130 million. 11 home games this year, the Warriors made $130 million. They only get to keep 30% of the playoff total in revenue that they gross. But all the same, since the 2016 postseason, the Warriors have racked up $100 million off the playoffs. This is from Tim Kawakami at The Athletic. They're going to do everything they can to keep it together. But how long are they going to be willing to pay $2 for every one? That's what they're doing. So you ask yourself, one, how long are they going to be willing to pay $2 for every one? And then on top of them being willing to pay $2 on every one, how long is this just simply going to go with the team itself holding up? Right? David West talked about how if people knew what was going on during the year that you would trip, but he said that it didn't matter really because his team didn't have no suckers and nobody said what was going on out there in them streets. And then Kevin Durant did an interview with Lee Jenkins that I feel like, according to the principles that David West is using here, it sounds a lot like Kevin Durant would be a sucker according to his parlance. And Durant said that he kind of settled in a little more there. He started popping off a little bit more. He said they saw the real him. And then when they saw the real him, they were like, oh, this is a little different. But do they, like, the things that have come up with them, are these things that you can just shake off and come back next year and then everything's okay? Like, what I find interesting about the idea of Draymond Green trying to come back and get him one of those Supermax extensions is this. You get that Supermax extension by winning either one, like winning one of those big honors, or by being first, second, or third team All-NBA. Now, maybe Draymond could try to go out here and get himself Defensive Player of the Year. Maybe that'll be the thing that gets it for him, right? Or he's going to go out here gunning to be third team All-NBA. And the way Draymond's going to get himself on the third team All-NBA is by putting up some better stats. And by better stats, I mean by scoring more. And one thing about this is when Steve Kerr had been out, Draymond shot a lot more, and Draymond shot a lot more effectively. With the money that's on the line right now, the money that Draymond says that he's out here trying to get, how easy going to be for Steve Kerr to tell Draymond not to shoot? And how's this go with everybody else when Draymond comes out there shooting? How's it go when you're Steph Curry and you feel as though you don't get to shoot as much as you would like to shoot because of the way that Kerr runs his offense if Draymond come out here and start gunning? What do you wind up with? Right. Like all these great teams that have ever been put together through the course of time, man, holding them together is just generally hard. Now, you can take what went on in the 90s with the Bulls, for example. Now, of course, they had a couple of years where Michael Jordan dipped out of there. But they really only, through the whole run, held on to two guys. They held on to Jordan and Pippen. Everybody else kind of rotated in and out. But those were the two guys that they were able to hold on to. The run for the Lakers, it was really two guys. It was Magic and Kareem. And then everybody else kind of rotated and shuffled in around that one. With the Spurs, now granted that run is like 20 years, but still, the constant through the whole thing was Tim Duncan. And where they got lucky was they had Tim Duncan and David Robinson through 2003. And so now as Tony Parker and Ginobili get better, now you start sliding them in and they take on more important roles. But normally to get this done, you really only got to hold on to one or two guys. The game has changed though because the arms race has ramped up. You start with the 08 Celtics, you move to the Heat after they went and got those guys, and then you move to the things that everybody had to do to catch up with the Heat. And while people were doing those things to catch up with the Heat, Golden State basically emerged out of nowhere with a homegrown super team, which is almost an antithesis to the notion of an idea of a super team. then on top of that, sorry, so the Warriors ramped that thing up. The Cavs had already made their moves to try to get it going before we knew what the Warriors were. They made the move to get LeBron. They made the move to get Kevin Love. So then that ramps up what we got going here. And we see what happens all around the league. And then the Warriors ramped the damn thing up again when they went and got Kevin Durant. And so once they go and get Kevin Durant, everybody else has got to ramp up their situation and get their roster strong enough to compete against the Warriors. The Warriors now are in this interesting place where they're like, yo, we just want to hold on to what we have, which makes perfect sense because what they've had has been good enough. Like, you understand the idea that they just want to hold on to the guys that they have. But that's kind of how the runs fall off. Is trying to hold on to too many of the guys that you have. That's the way they tend to end. Now, the difference, of course, with Golden State is their guys are young. Like, they seem like a bunch of dudes that you're able to keep together. But if you walk in the door and your program is, we're going to keep together the guys that we have, I believe you're engaging in an element of hustling backwards. Not that you go out of your way like, hey, we got to figure out what to do with Klay Thompson. Why? We need a change. No, it's not that. But if somebody calls you up about Klay Thompson, you got to be on the phone and listen to him. Kyle Kami had also talked about the fact that the Warriors were interested in trying to acquire Anthony Davis, which you probably can't do because the Pelicans can't really ship him out of there after they actually won a playoff series. But Kyle Kami reported that if it required giving up any of the Warriors' four core players, then they were not going to make a move for Anthony Davis. Okay, look, guys, if you don't want to trade Steph Curry to get Anthony Davis, I get that. If you don't want to trade Kevin Durant to get Anthony Davis, I get that. If you don't want to trade Klay Thompson and Draymond Green to get Anthony Davis, maybe I can see it. But if you won't trade Klay Thompson or Draymond Green to get Anthony Davis, you're getting a little bit too enamored with your own guys. If they are willing to send you Anthony Davis and they're like, we need one of those two guys, then you build the rest of the package and then you make that trade because everybody else is about to ramp that up. People around the league think the Kawhi Leonard's probably going to stay in San Antonio. Okay, that's fine. That's what they think. And maybe he does. Or maybe they wind up having to trade him because somebody is interested in him. We're going to have wherever LeBron James ends up in this free agent season. Okay. That's going to change the game up a little bit. The Celtics, man, they're going to just simply get better, and they still have the 2019 pick from Sacramento. They're going to ramp this thing up. Everybody out here is ramping this thing up. Golden State's talking about staying the same. And even staying the same is going to cost them a ridiculous amount of money. Bob Myers, general manager of the Warriors, Bob says that whatever Kevin Durant wants, that's what he'll get. Like, what are they willing to pay Kevin Durant? What Kevin Durant wants, right? Kevin Durant, they basically say Kevin Durant can negotiate out his own contract. Now, of course, there's an irony to that because he can't negotiate his own contract because there is a maximum salary thing that goes on there that stops him from getting what he's worth. So it's easy for you to be Bob Myers and say, he can have whatever he wants because you know you're getting over no matter how it plays. Of course, Kevin Durant can get whatever he wants. But how do you keep all of this together? How do you keep it all together with all them cats still wanting to be around each other? How do you keep it all together in a way that makes the money work? Because, hey, Joe Lacob did not get that rich by spending $2 for things that cost one. Joe Lacob did not get that rich because of his enthusiasm for paying taxes. That being said, Joe Lacob got that arena over there in San Francisco that all that money went into, and they're going to have people in it, but then people need to be pleased. So, yeah, he kind of needs to hold this thing together. I just don't know how exactly you go about doing it. All right, congratulate me, man. We just came off those finals, and I did 14 minutes of content on the NBA champions before we waited to get to LeBron James. I feel like it's kind of bad form to have a team win a championship and not talk about them off the top. But let's be real here. Y'all want to talk about LeBron? No matter what anybody says, man, LeBron is every bit as interesting as people in my business tell you that he is. The reason that we talk about him so much is because you listen to us talk about him so much. He has been the centerpiece of really the NBA, I would say, since 2007. He kind of took that mantle with the fourth quarter and overtime against Detroit in 2007. Not that game, but led to them making it to the NBA Finals. And we've been here for LeBron ever since. And now LeBron is probably headed to another round of free agency. I guess his hand will be okay by then. Okay, look, I want to be clear about something when I joke about the hand and the cast and stuff like that. I have no doubt in my mind that LeBron James' hand was injured. I don't care what video somebody puts up of him doing push-ups. Like his hand wasn't really that hurt. Look at him doing push-ups. Well, yeah, he also played 3 more games in the damn finals. Like, clearly he's able to do things in spite of. Right? So anyway, LeBron shows up with the Cavs. And the thing about him showing up with the Cavs was he only showed up to the press conference with the Cavs because he wanted us to know that he had the Cavs. He could have got that Cavs done after he did the press conference. Just as easily. And he didn't, because he wanted us to know that his hand was hurt. Okay. I mean, bruh, you could have had 3 hands. We didn't think he was going to win that series. Like, ain't really no need for any level of excuse or anything like that. There was never a moment where we thought that y'all were, like, going to win it. I thought they could. But there's no situation under which LeBron needs to explain why it is that they did not win a championship with the roster that he had. He didn't need to do that. But, you know, there he was. He decided to come out there with it. But it'll be healed by the time, you know, basketball season comes back around or whatever it is. Hey, guys, we have no idea where LeBron is going to sign. Let's just go ahead and get that out of here right now. Gary Payton did an interview with Black Sports Online where he said that LeBron's sons had registered to play for a high school in L.A. I am sure that Gary Payton has been told this. I don't think that Gary Payton pulled this out of thin air. I also do believe that Gary Payton tried to kind of bully LeBron on some, like, you know, Pusha T type stuff about raising his son. He's like, ain't no real man go send his son to go to school and then him not move out there. Although people send their kids to boarding schools all the time, whatever. You know, rich people, I guess it's a different world. But Gary Payton don't know what LeBron's going to do. Now, when you find out what LeBron's going to do, it will be like things like the schools and stuff will give you the earliest hint. The problem in this case is the school, Sierra Canyon High School, they say that they haven't heard anything about Bronny showing up to go to school there. But yeah, it'll be somebody like that. It'll be like a guy that runs a moving truck company. That'll be the one to let you know that LeBron is out of there. It'll be somebody surrounded the sneaker game because they're going to need to make all kinds of arrangements in whatever city he winds up in. Like, those are the people that are probably going to wind up telling you. But we have no idea. None whatsoever. Y'all saw Dwayne Wade did that interview with Dwayne. Was talking about he thinks that the decision for LeBron is going to come down to what works for his family. You know, that was his call. Dwayne don't know what the hell LeBron going to do. Last time Dwayne was in Las Vegas with LeBron right before the decision was made to go back to Cleveland. Dwayne got back on that plane from Las Vegas to go to Miami. Dwayne ain't had no idea what the hell LeBron was going to do. None. None of us know what in the world he is going to do other than we know he ain't coming back to Cleveland. For whatever it's worth, guys, you can say this about if we got anything built up in the track record of LeBron James and free agency and everything else. This part we know. He has had a contract decision to make now 3 times in his career going on the 4th. The first decision was made in 2006 when he decided to sign the 3-year extension that made him a free agent before the new collective bargaining agreement would come out. He stayed. The second time, actually I could add there's more to that, because the second time was when he decided to go to Miami. The next time was when he decided to come back to Cleveland. Then he had the 1-year deal that he did with Cleveland, and then he decided to come back. And then he had another 1-year situation, and he decided to sign a bit more of a deal, right? And now we're coming back. We're back to this one. When there has been no intrigue surrounding LeBron's decision, he has stayed where he was. If there has been any drop, really, of legitimate intrigue about where LeBron's going to go, if there's ever been a situation where the rest of the league approached LeBron's free agency as though they had a chance to sign him, he has left. All that's to say, he ain't coming back to no Cleveland. That's it. And he ain't coming back to no Cleveland because why do you come back to a Cleveland? That's why you ain't coming back to Cleveland. Why would you go back to Cleveland? Why would you look at that roster and that cap situation? What in the world that would tell you that that's the place you want to come back to? He ain't going back to no damn Cleveland. Sorry. Now, granted, the last time I said ain't no way in the world he's going back to no damn Cleveland, he went back to damn Cleveland. I get that. He did it. But you look at that roster, nah. And part of it is, look, if you're going to be LeBron in the era of this cap and with everything they've done to try to make it hard to hold teams together, Ben, after about 4 years or so in a place, the team, in order to make the moves that are necessary to maximize the fact you got LeBron James on the team, then you're probably going to wind up in a situation that makes it harder to improve, because those are the trade-offs that you have to make, especially when the trade-offs involve re-signing your own free agents. That's where they wound up with Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, and Mon Shumpert was another guy that was an example of this, is that if you're already over the cap, like with Tristan Thompson, people are like, they should have just let Tristan Thompson go. They weren't going to be able to replace Tristan Thompson with a player anywhere near as good as Tristan Thompson. Therefore, you got to give Tristan Thompson his money. There's no way around it. The same thing's happening across the board. Like, if there was a bad play that the Cavs made in terms of investing in their own personnel, is that they were heavily invested in big men who couldn't protect the rim. So you have Tristan Thompson, you have Kevin Love. If you play them together, okay, it's cool. You can put Kevin Love on the perimeter to stress the defense out a little bit. The problem is when you come back on the other end, Tristan Thompson can switch on those pick and rolls, but Kevin Love can't defend the rim. Neither of those guys can protect the rim. So how are you going to play defense in this modern age in that way if you don't have anybody that can come out here and protect the rim? Like, those are the problems that roster had. Those are the problems that roster continues to have. They had to give up Kyrie Irving. They didn't really get anything back for him they can speak of. That being said, who's to say if Kyrie Irving is ever going to be the player that he was or how much he's going to play, given the fact that he's hurt fairly frequently? But time's about up on that roster. So it's about time for LeBron to go somewhere else. In part, this is in part because of, I don't want to say LeBron has a mercenary sort of nature here, but he does not have that attachment to franchises that fans think is really cool. No, he doesn't have that. He doesn't go about it that way. That's not him. And if you're not going to be that guy, then every 4 years, chances are you're going to need to go to another team, because that's going to give you your best chance to win. The other thing, by the way, your man Dwayne Wade said that, you know, he didn't think LeBron was going to care about winning. He's just going to care about happiness. How much happiness can you have if you're LeBron James when you're not winning? Like, the way people treat you, the way people talk about you, the lens through which we view him, how much happiness are we talking about for him if he's not winning? Now, there's another part. We get to talking about LeBron and where he will or will not wind up. I heard for the first time 2 years ago from a source I would consider to be credible. He was certain that LeBron was going to go to L.A. It was 2 years ago, but the team he threw out there was the Clippers. He gave me a name of somebody who would know such things. He said he talked to that guy, and that guy told him that LeBron was going to go to the Clippers. So 2 years, that one's come up. I've heard at different points that Houston was sure that LeBron was coming and that the whole thing had long been arranged. I've heard that one. You'll probably hear another one pretty soon of where LeBron may wind up. I personally have leaned toward Los Angeles as the place that LeBron winds up for a while. And maybe it's in part because of the house that he owns there. But it seems like a natural transition for a guy who wants his next move to be to move into Hollywood and become a giant, like an action star. He sees himself as being the superhero on screen that he's basically been on the floor, except on the screen he's going to have like all the, like, you know, lasers and stuff, all of that. So I've always thought that L.A. was a natural place for him to go. And let's be real about this. If LeBron goes to L.A., he ain't playing for the Clippers. Like, LeBron don't strike me as an off-Broadway sort of dude. LeBron decides he's going to go to L.A. He's going to wind up playing for the Lakers. And let me tell you something about going to L.A. and playing for the Clippers. I'm sure that if you're LeBron and you play for the Clippers, yes, the Clippers will become a much bigger deal in L.A. Yes, there will be more people who attend Clippers games. You also could quite possibly become the most hated athlete in Los Angeles, because Los Angeles is not here for the Clippers. Los Angeles is here for the Lakers. The Lakers are a part of L.A. The Clippers are something to do while you're in town. Like, that's what they are. Chris Paul threw out the first pitch at a Dodgers game once and got booed. It's while he played for the Clippers. He got booed. Bronny going no Clippers. So, like, if he goes to L.A., he'll go to the Lakers. Now, you imagine being LeBron for a second and you thinking about the possibility of going to the Lakers. You imagine being Magic Johnson and you've been preparing and getting ready to sell LeBron and Paul George on this idea of coming to the Lakers. Right? You can make a couple big swings this offseason. Suddenly, the Lakers are back, and the NBA is a much better place when the Lakers are back. You got the chance to do this. You got the option. You got the possibility. And then you look up on the internet and Lonzo Ball dropped a diss track about his teammate. Yeah. Kyle Kuzma. Kyle Kuzma. Lonzo Ball dropped a diss tape, a diss track about Kyle Kuzma. And Lonzo, I just need to help you out with something. Because Magic has definitely said that you're going to be the next great player for the Lakers. Magic has definitely said that he sees your name being retired. Hall of Fame type of player. That's what Magic sees that you might become. But if you think Magic won't put a stamp on your behind, if LeBron says so, man, you are out of there so fast. You, your daddy, perhaps even your greasy granny. All of you will be long gone if you are an impediment to getting LeBron to come there. Because I'm going to tell you this right now. LeBron got a 14-year-old son. That makes LeBron, like, super grown. That means that LeBron looking at a cat like Lonzo, and when he sees Lonzo, he sees Bronny. He sees the same thing. That's the place that he's looking at when he sees this. Yo, man, he ain't trying to play on no team with Bronny right now. Like, he talks about the idea of playing with or, like, LeBron talks about the idea of playing with or against Bronny. Hey, man, he ain't trying to be on Bronny's team at this moment. How childish is this? You cats is out here putting diss tracks out about each other, and then Kyle Kuzma goes on the internet and puts a comment underneath and says, hey, no Pusha T, ain't even no clap back. He say he's going to beat him up the next time he sees him. And he says the next time he sees him is going to be on Wednesday. And I honestly kind of here for it. I think the Kuzma has a point. I think the Kuzma is well within his rights to roll up on Lonzo and slap him in the face. Bow. Charlie Murphy, you know, Rick James, right? Like, yo, you know, there had to be a duel. Somebody had to go. I could totally see that wind up happening. You think LeBron trying to go to a team that just a couple of years ago they had the Snapchat snitching situation with D'Angelo Russell and all of that? You think LeBron trying to go to a team where these cats are making diss records about each other and then you got to worry about somebody's loud dad? Like, really, you think that's what it's going to be? Because I don't think that's what it's going to be. If I got to handicap the LeBron race from right here, I would say probably, with no information whatsoever, just guessing. Number one, Lakers. Number two, Rockets. Number three, if Danny Ainge has the courage to do it, LeBron. I, in some ways, am rooting for LeBron to go to the Celtics. Not because I want the Celtics to be good. But let's appreciate a couple of things about that possibility. One of them, Jonathan Jarks of The Ringer wrote an interesting thing about how easy it would be for the Celtics to make the space in order to sign LeBron. But part of doing that would involve trading either Gordon Hayward or Kyrie Irving. So that means that either Kyrie would have to go back to Cleveland, which he would be miserable with, or he'd have to be in Boston and go back to being LeBron's little brother, which he does not really want to do. That would be funny. The other part that would be funny is that it took LeBron a little while to get over the hill that was the Boston Celtics, and then he's been giving the Celtics that work ever since. Can you imagine what it would be like if you are the Boston Celtics and LeBron comes and signs with you? You better hope you win a championship there, because what he is telling you is, you'll never get the chance to beat me again. Not now, not ever. And I have to say, that would perhaps be the greatest success any man could ever have. Lifetime victory. Let me tell you something that's interesting also I've seen that's happened with this LeBron situation, which is we are people reevaluating the idea of whether LeBron James makes his teammates better. And the notion of making your teammates better has always been like somewhat specious. Like Charles Barkley talked about that when he was a player, when people talked about Magic Johnson made his teammates better. And he's like, he's out here making Magic Johnson and Kareem look better. Come over here and make Manu Bol look better. Like, let me know how that works out. And he's right about that. There's but so much that you can do. Now, the argument that people are making is that, well, Kevin Love averaged 25 points a game and 15 rebounds in Minnesota. He doesn't do that in Cleveland. Yeah, it's funny how when you're the number one option, you get more shots than you do when you're not the number one option. Like, wow, isn't that strange? The question is, like, how easy do you make it to play for teammates to play alongside you? And when you look at who the collection of players is that you have, what are you doing to put them in positions to maximize whatever skills it is that they have? And I think that you can just watch LeBron play with some of these cats that he's played with over the years, and you can see that. A guy like Kobe winds up being a different dude to talk about, because Kobe's not here to get shots for you. Kobe's here to get shots. That's it. He is here to get shots. Like, what I found comical about this thing that's come up with Kobe, where Kobe was talking to Howard Beck with Bleacher Report, and like LeBron just got to find a way. And Kobe's like, well, I've always only measured by championships. Championships are, you know, always the only thing I cared about. Guys, have you ever watched Kobe Bryant play basketball? Because does that look to you like a guy that only cares about winning championships when he does this? And look, he's won five of them. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's never been a champion. I'm saying that what about the way Kobe Bryant plays basketball says all I care about is the squad. Because that's not what his game is. Even he will admit this in times where he's talking about where at my core, I am a one-on-one player. I also love this idea, the idea I've only measured by championships. Okay, so Michael Jordan is Kobe Bryant's like favorite player. You know, he's talked about this and like watching the Come Fly With Me video and everything else and all that. Okay, cool. Kobe Bryant was born in 1978. That means that when Michael Jordan won his first championship, Kobe Bryant was 12 years old. Do you think that Kobe Bryant waited until 1998 when Michael Jordan got his sixth championship to say, you know what? Michael Jordan has six championships, which now passes Bill Russell, which now makes Michael Jordan the greatest in my mind. Do you think that's what Kobe said? Because that's not what Kobe said. This idea that the only thing that matters is championships is something that you learn as you get older and less entertaining as a human being. That's not something that you ride out with your whole life. Come on, man. He's not fooling anybody with this at all. What Kobe has managed to do is interject himself into a discussion that passed him by. There was never a point where any of us had any realistic discussions about whether or not Kobe Bryant was better than Michael Jordan. The question was whether he was the best since Mike, whether he was the next Mike, but nobody ever said he was better than Michael Jordan. We've reached a place where LeBron, where it's a little legitimate to discuss whether or not he is better than Michael Jordan. Kobe got straight bypassed, and Kobe's like, oh, no, 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 no. There are plenty of ways that I can inject myself back into this one. Now, you remember when Kobe sent that tweet? Hashtag enjoy my five. Hashtag enjoy MJ6. Hashtag enjoy LeBron's journey. Dog, wasn't nobody talking about your five? Like, we're off that. We're not. Like, we appreciate that thing you did for us with the Telestrator, you know, and the film study. Come on, homie. We're not there for that. We're not. But the Kobe stands, they don't really like to hear this. So I got the Kobe stands now out here trying to explain to me how it is that LeBron does not actually make anybody else that's around him better. Did you look at that roster they threw out there? Like the guys that we're talking about giving the ball to outside of Kevin Love. And Kevin Love's had his own set of issues, physical and otherwise. Where's the greatness? Who is being underutilized on the Cavs as they are currently constructed? Anybody? Who you got? Yeah, I don't have it either. I don't. And so this LeBron-Kobe war is so weird because everybody winds up knocking down the other side in order to try to prove their point. Kobe to me is so fascinating because I actually do believe that as a basketball player, he's a bit overrated. And the reason I think that he's a bit, just a bit, Kobe Stan, just a bit. I don't think he's as good as you think he. Calm down, Kobe Stan. Breathe. Hey, somebody go get that Kobe Stan one of the paper bags to breathe into. He over there hyperventilating. I want to explain myself, but I want to make sure he hears me. All right, Kobe Stan, you good? You straight? Okay. Kobe fits an aesthetic of a basketball player that we like. Kobe fits the Michael Jordan aesthetic as well as anybody else does. And Kobe has all the attitude stuff that you want from like a great basketball player. The idea that I'm going to make every shot and he looks so damn cool why he does it all. But Kobe was in many ways an inefficient volume scorer. And as we do more and think more, we realize the shortcomings of the volume scorer. We see them. We get this. Kobe, when this is done, we're going to be asking questions like, was Kobe better than James Harden? Now, of course, the issue for James Harden is James Harden doesn't have rings. But you'll have an argument just looking at the basketball itself. Is Kobe better than Kevin Durant? Kevin Durant now has those two championships. You think Kobe's going to go down as being better than Kevin Durant? Like you might put him down there as better than Kevin Durant, but then you go back and look at some numbers and a little bit more, you know, things that have a basis, an evidentiary basis. The case for Kobe gets to be just a little bit more difficult to make. But people love him. And it's so wild. They love him even though he absolutely does not love him back. But man, people love Kobe. And at his best, Kobe was really, really, really good. There's no question about that. At his best, Kobe was really, really, really good. But LeBron was a better player than him from 2007 on. And on career stuff, I'm not exactly sure when it was passed. But it was passed in such a way that there are dudes that have more rings than Larry Bird that we don't think are better players than Larry Bird. Larry Bird had 3 rings. I don't think I'm saying Tim Duncan's a better player than Larry Bird. I don't. Tim Duncan's rings don't change that fact. That's kind of where LeBron is with Kobe. LeBron's got 3. Kobe has 5. Great player, Kobe. But you're not LeBron James. You do, however, and you have, however, managed to put together a collection of stands that is unrivaled in the NBA. They are the most annoying people in the basketball ecosystem. Yes, they are. And Kobe, they love your dirty draws. I wish I had anybody that loved me as much as the Kobe stand loves Kobe Bryant. Take solace in that. Take solace in your whole career. But deal with it, man. You're just not LeBron James. All right. I want to take a moment and talk to you guys about ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. They learn what you're looking for, identify people with the right experience, and then ZipRecruiter invites them to apply to your job. Now, invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site just one day. And hold on, ZipRecruiter doesn't just stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, my listeners can join ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, story number one of the day comes from the tech world.
Hi, I'm April Glazer, a journalist at Slate, and this week I wrote about how Axon, the country's largest police body camera manufacturer, and they a maker of tasers, and they sell tasers to police, is pairing up with DJI, the world's largest consumer drone maker, to sell drones to police. Now, they are going to be taking this police drone data and putting it in an Axon-run private database called evidence.com that then police will have access to. We've seen these types of private police databases abused in the past, like with Vigilant Solutions, a police license plate reader maker. Police departments and sanctuary cities that use that technology have been sharing the data that they collect with Department of Homeland Security, and that is then accessible to ICE agents, as I've reported in the past. Now, these particular drones will not be equipped with tasers or even necessarily facial recognition technology, but facial recognition is something that Axon has been exploring or expressed interest in to put inside their police body cameras. It's not something they currently do, but the civil rights and civil liberties community have expressed concern that it could exacerbate inequities and racial profiling in policing because, you know, let's say a cop pulls over a person who is of color and they pair that face with that they capture on their police body camera with a mugshot database. That mugshot database is already going to have a disproportionate amount of people of color in it just because of racial profiling and the history of that in policing. And that could lead to further questioning, whereas if a white person is pulled over, they're less likely to generate a match. So, you know, as we see these police surveillance tech companies start to experiment with different types of technologies, you know, communities should be aware of how they're being policed and how they're being surveilled. And hopefully we'll be able to be engaged in those conversations. But as I've reported, that doesn't always happen.
Yeah, I feel like we have people on to talk about the future here very often on this show. And I get more and more scared with each, if you haven't heard. Now, this is my thought on all of this, is that we've signed up for these cameras in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of good things that have come from having all these cameras. But the thing is, in the end, people themselves will always lean toward a notion of what they call safety and lean toward what they think is a notion of proof. They'll always do that. But man, on the back end of that, there wind up being some real consequences. I also had not really thought about until right now the idea that there would be like an industry leader in body cams. Somebody selling something always.
All right, but money story number two of the day comes from the business world.
IHOP, the International House of Pancakes, is changing its name to IHOB because now it's going to feature burgers, the company said, in a tweet that we'll note was not posted on April Fool's Day. The company had teased the big change last week, leading many people to guess what the B in IHOB could possibly mean. Not that many people said burgers. And after the big reveal, a lot of joking responses followed. Some people just asked, why? A user named Michelle asked, why couldn't you be International House of Brunch and start serving mimosas and bellinis? The Wendy's burger chain also jumped in, saying, not really afraid of the burgers from a place that decided pancakes were too hard. Ouch. Within hours, that tweet got to be even more popular than IHOP's original announcement. IHOP had promised to shake things up 60 years after it started up as a kind of model UN of the breakfast world. To jazz things up on social media, it's been switching all its P's to B's. Possibilities became bossabilities, for instance. Dear Internet, we appreciate your patience, the company said on Monday. But after the IHOP news came out, one Twitter user said, your marketing team needs to be fired ASAP. And another person corrected them, ASAB. There's no sign yet whether the change will be permanent or just a flash in the pan cake, I guess, to promote hamburgers. IHOP is moving its menu a little closer to Applebee's Grill and Bar. The chain is also owned by Dine Brands, just like IHOP. By adding burgers, IHOP, or IHOB, clearly wants to boost its business in the midday and early evening, outside of its usual strengths in the morning. Last month, IHOP said that nearly half of its customers come in for breakfast. Bill Chappell, NPR.
I thought it was going to be the International House of Breakfast. I thought they were doing one of those things where you like try to expand it. You know what I mean? We're like, yeah, we got pancakes, but we also got this other stuff. So I thought it was going to be the International House of Breakfast. And then it turned to the International House of Burgers. And I have to say, for everyone who's saying how stupid this is for IHOP and how they gave up their whole brand, man, they ain't give up the whole brand. They ain't taking down all them damn signs. They still going to be the IHOP. Like, you know, it isn't that. I have to say, and Gabe, I ask you this. Would you have paid any attention to the fact that IHOP was selling burgers if this hadn't happened the way it did?
I was under the impression that they're already selling burgers. Just not
yeah, but would you have ever thought about, you know, I might want to check out those IHOP burgers. Because I got to say, the IHOP burgers, it sounds like they're cooking them with all, like, with the good meat and stuff like that. Like, I feel like I have been made aware of something they are trying that I wouldn't have paid attention to otherwise, which seems like it's the point.
Yeah, and it seems like a couple of different restaurants are doing that now, right? They're trying to get in on this, like, gourmet burger trend. I saw the other day that McDonald's now is, like, marketing, like, all fresh, you know, meat hamburgers and trying to do the gourmet thing, trying to get in on the millennial burger action.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody's going to be like, I used to go to IHOP, but then they started calling themselves IHOP, but I'm never going back there again. Nah, man, you're going to be drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning at that IHOP calling, you're going to pick up the phone.
And are those people going to be ordering burgers, or are they going to be stoked to be able to have pancakes at 3 a.m.
I think they'll do, but I'll tell you, there's going to be some people that are like, you know what? I'm going to try that burger. That's all. But what they need is to get people to say, I'm going to try the burger. And if that happens, then this whole, you know, nonsensical thing is worth it.
All right, story number three of the day comes from the world of politics.
Hi, this is Clint Finley from Wired. You may have heard that net neutrality is dead, but it's more accurate to say that the FCC's net neutrality protections are dead. The fight to save net neutrality lives on. You see, those rules used to say that internet service providers like Comcast and Verizon weren't allowed to block you from accessing particular sites or apps or otherwise using their power to discriminate against lawful content. Those rules, unfortunately, are gone, but the good news is that some states, including New York, New Jersey, and Washington, State have passed their own net neutrality protections, and others like California are considering new laws as well. Meanwhile, Congress is considering legislation that could restore the FCC's rules. The Senate already passed this resolution and is now waiting on a vote in the House, where it faces longer but not insurmountable odds. Finally, it's possible that the courts could block the FCC's decision to repeal its own rules. If that happens, though, the agency may try again. So, this isn't over, not at all. And there's still time for you to call your state or national representatives to have your voice heard.
Gabe, I thought every time I think we got this thing worked out, we have not. Am I the only person that feels that way?
Every time I think something's going to go away, it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It just keeps coming back.
I feel like this is happening. And I feel like after watching how it went when they had Zuckerberg up there talking to Congress, basically I feel like the people in Congress and at these organizations are very similar to the rest of America, where it's like, I know what you're talking about with net neutrality, but I don't really understand what it means. Like, I always feel like somebody found out something new. They're like, wait a minute, is that? Hold on, that changes everything. And that's how we wind up with this holdup. But this is a big one. Because, I mean, the dreams of the internet for so many people was about the democracy of it all. Except no matter what it was going to take big money to figure out how everything was going to run. And so the big money came out there and figured out how everything was going to run. And then guess what? Big money runs it for big money, and now we worry they're going to take it away from the rest of us. All right. So, Gabe was out of here last week, so we didn't do a show. We've had a lot of Kanye stuff that has managed to come up in this course of time. I'd like to start again, but I understand a lot of you have made the decision you're never going to listen to Kanye again, and okay, I don't blame you. I just don't really operate in the same space. Anyway, the Pusha T record for Kanye was pretty good. Kanye also did a record with Kid Cudi, and I listened to like a couple songs on that. And, you know, they weren't bad. But I believe I've told some of you the story. If you haven't heard the story before, I will tell you the story right now. I went to go see Outkast at the three shows they did at Centennial Olympic Park in Atlanta in 2014 to ostensibly wrap up their reunion tour. And Kid Cudi was the opening act. On Saturday night, he was the opener right before Outkast. Like, this is a great spot. The park is packed. We all there. And I'll tell you, on Sunday night, Ray Shremmerd was one of the groups that opened. And that's where I kind of got turned onto them, because they went out there and they killed it, right? They're like, this ain't our crowd, whatever. They killed it. Kid Cudi came out there and
he didn't feel the love from the audience.
So like half hour before he's supposed to leave, he's like, yeah, I'm going to do one more song, then I'm going to get out of here complaining about how it wasn't his crowd. And I was like, you buster. Like, people out here, we were down to give you a chance if you had given us a show. It's not our fault we thought your performance was whack. And then I saw Cudi in L.A. very briefly, and he brought Kanye on stage. And it was like, oh, okay, this is cool. And then I looked around at all those kids that were out there, and I'm just like, look, man, I didn't come up in the proper era. I suppose you really appreciate that. But I, you know what though? Let me be fair. I'll say this. I put on the Cudi album and the first verse I heard of it was, Pusha T. That was pretty dope. And then there's Kanye. So I listened to what's it called? Yay. That's the name of the album. It's called Yay. And Kanye tried to get extra deep with it on that first song. That one where you're talking about, I thought about killing you today, right? And his whole point is, I have thought about killing myself, and I love myself way more than I love you. So why would I not think about killing you? Which is like kind of spooky and ominous. And I feel like he thought he was getting to some, like, you know, some thought place that people could go to. And I feel like this with Kanye. If you're going to put us through all this stuff that you don't put everybody through, if you're going to be out here and you're going to be saying this crazy stuff and you're going to be kind of objectifying yourself for some of the struggles that you have with mental illness and everything else, and then you kind of try to come onto your record and talk about that, you know, those things, bro, you can't be boring. And that it's boring. Nothing he's saying on that record is interesting. It is all boring. He talked about the world kind of coming down on top of his head after he did the thing about slavery being a choice. And you know what he, like, how he talked about that, what the context was that he talked about that in, about how his woman told him that he was messing up the money and how mad he was that he had disappointed her by messing up the money. That was the conclusion that Kanye had after saying slavery is a choice. This goes out to all the dudes whose girls be telling them don't mess up the money and you don't listen. What? Like, that's the ultimate conclusion that you reach. And so for me, it's just kind of like, you know, this dude just isn't really in that interesting anymore. And it's not even about like he's not interesting just because he says some things that I disagree with, the things that I found to be fairly offensive. I just don't think he has things to talk about on record anymore that I want to hear, because I was down to delve into his mind and where he is at this place and everything else. And then he did it and he gave me seven tracks of nonsense. I mean, he had a nice run. College Dropout was 2004. That was a long time ago. He had a really nice run. Thanks for stopping by the booth, but I'm officially at the point where I will never get hype about a Kanye album again. Not even as a matter of principle, not me putting my foot down. I just think that time has passed. I've grown up, and I would say so is he, but nah, not really. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here twice a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, Thanks to April Glazer of Slate. Check out her story on surveillance drones at slate.com. Bill Chappell of NPR. Check out his story about IHOP becoming IHOP at NPR.org. And Clint Finley writes about business for Wired. Check out his story on net neutrality at wired.com. Also, guys, don't forget, for the golf lovers out there, check out the Maddie and the Caddy podcast with Matt Barry and Michael Collins. Get you ready for the U.S. Open. I saw my man Michael yesterday. Hilarious as always. We also have a book club. We've been doing it. We're reading Friday Night Lights. We'll talk about that on the last Tuesday of the month of June. But check out Friday Night Lights by Buzz Bissinger if you want to participate with us. And please rate us, review us on Apple Podcasts. We would like 5 stars. We work very hard. Show us your appreciation, damn it. Talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.